Big Red Bench. Game on. Saturday and Sunday from 6 p.m.
The Joanne O'Riordan Podcast. A Big Red Bench production for Cork's Red FM.
Hello and welcome back to the Joanne O'Riordan Podcast with me, Joanne O'Riordan. Our next guest is Mary O'Connor, ex-Cork, Camogie and latest footballer, holder of over 21 All-Ireland medals between club and county, and current CEO of Federation of Irish Sport. Mary talks to us about what it was like being a Cork, Camogie and latest footballer during the early 90s and all the way up to 2009, and what it's like to be the CEO of Federation of Irish Sport, where she runs over 12,000 clubs. Mary, thanks for coming. How are you?
Thanks, Joanne. Delighted to be here. Delighted.
Yeah. Our first time ever meeting was actually at Dr. Conn, wasn't it? And we were both looking at each other like, we've never met before. Like, Cork's a small county in a way. Like,
I was like a little child. It's like, Bree, Zach, will you introduce me to Joanne? And Bree was kind of looking at me going, all right, Mary, like, yeah, no problem. So, no, it was great. Great to finally meet you.
I was like buzzing because first of all, I was like probably the only person ever to summon Roy Keane over to me because I couldn't get through like the tables. Like Dr. Conn had over like 1,000 people there. So I was like kind of scrambling through, and then someone was like, well, I just bring him over to you. And I was like, yes. And then you came over and I was like trying to like yelling at you aggressively like, oh my God, it's so nice to meet you. You'll never guess what happened to me. But I suppose, You started way back when, so it's really funny because I'm 22 and I was reading all your stuff. I felt like a bit of a creepy stalker. And, you know, you started, was it in 93? Was it with Cork Camogie or a bit beforehand?
I started first with Cork Ladies Football.
Okay.
In junior. I was obviously only 16 at the time. What happened was, obviously Camogie was my first sport because in Killa football wasn't really played, and actually the first football team in Killa was an adult team. But in 93... I was asked to go play with Cork in junior because Cork were only junior then. Mm-hmm. So I said, yeah, played away, and I sure was only small, a young one, and went around the country playing National League games. I think we were Division 4. So it's actually taking, so we played Division 93, and then 94 we got to the All-Ireland semi-final. And this is kind of funny because it's kind of relevant now. People are saying, well, the Cork Ladies football team never played in Páirc Uí Chaoimh in a competitive match. But actually in 1994, we played the All-Ireland semi-final, now at adult, but it was junior, against Meath. And I was 17 at the time, and we were 9 points up at halftime and we lost by a point. So I was devastated. So, but in 95 then, we atoned for that. We won the All-Ireland in Croke Park. But that same year, I was asked to go play on the Cork Camogie team as well. But I declined it because I just felt, I just want to stay on the football team because we were, after losing the year before, I wanted to make sure. And it was late in the year when I got asked onto the Cork Camogie team. And that year, we went on to win the All-Ireland junior football, but Cork Camogie went on to win the All-Ireland as well. And the following year then, I went on to the Cork Camogie team. And we lost the All-Ireland my first year in Cork. We lost the All-Ireland Camogie final, so I was kind of like, ooh, lost the All-Ireland medal there. But
sure, has to be done.
I know, yeah.
In 97, then you got your bitter revenge. And I was talking to someone and they were saying, bring up the pint, like the greatest pint to ever exist in Camogie.
Well, it's funny because anybody who knew me growing up, when I started off playing Camogie with Killa, I was a forward, centre forward, and then I ended up becoming one of those non-scoring forwards. I could hit the ball everywhere and anywhere, but actually between the two posts.
My brother was the same. They nicknamed him Drought. It was so bad.
Yeah, that's probably a good thing. But when I became a Cork minor, then Mary Moran decided you'd be a good centre back because I was able to read the play. So I went back centre back, and from the very first game I played there, I just loved it, and I was kind of happier too that I didn't have the pressure of trying to score. But in 96 got a really bad finger injury in the final. Went up to catch a ball and Yohan just took the hand off me, which is grand. It's all fair and love and war. But I went out to my coach at the time, it was in the first half. I said, I think my finger is dislocated. So he pulled it to put it back into place, but he actually pulled a broken finger. So he destroyed the joint. So my wedding ring finger now looks like, my father said I'd need a Jubilee clip to go on over. But so I ended up for the following year, in 97, in the National League wearing a cricket glove because of the pain of the actual catch the ball and so on. So eventually, by the time the All-Ireland final came around, I got rid of the cricket glove, even though I did look for some interesting photographs during the year. 97 was brilliant, and it was just fantastic because you win your first All-Ireland and, you know, you're playing Croke Park. And when I was growing up, like, Croke Park was the mecca. Like, it was where everybody wanted to play. Young girls and boys in Killa were treated the same. So it was just fantastic to finally get over the line in 97. I can still remember it, the final whistle and that first 30 seconds. And for any of the All-Irelands I was lucky enough to win, that first 30 to 40 seconds afterwards is just the best feeling.
Yeah, because I remember my very first All-Ireland final in Croke Park. It was, well, I wasn't playing, but it was 2005. And I remember my dad, were up in the wheelchair section up at the back. And I remember saying to my dad, like, we have to pitch invade, because like Jurley Noflin was playing at the time.
Oh, yeah.
And I remember dad was like, we can't, how are we going to get the chair down? I was like, we're going to figure it out, dad, it's going to happen. And then he put me onto his, like, the top of his head, and he like marched out. It was like it was like the wildest thing ever. And I'd say everyone was like looking. And of course, he met someone he knew on the pitch, you know, like, yeah, typical dads, you know, whatever. I suppose, you know, I'm actually interested. So I, you know, I was interested in kind of the ladies football kind of perspective, and I suppose, you know, I was reading Relentless by Mary White, and you know, in the book she was basically saying that in football there was a little bit of like kind of club rivalry was creeping into Intercounty, and you were saying that in Camogie that actually wasn't the case. So what was like the difference, like what was like the main divider that wasn't there maybe in ladies football?
I think from a Camogie point of view, there was a kind of a balance in Cork, in that, you know, different teams winning different counties, and obviously then the Glen went on this fantastic run. But I think Camogie had been competing at a higher level for longer. So when you were a player coming into that Cork panel, you came into a culture of, you know, what happens with your club stays with your club. You're playing for Cork now, we're a team. But in the Cork ladies football, it was like we had no success at adult level. In Cork ladies football for years and years, because we just couldn't compete at senior, we weren't organised. So then when we did get to go play with Cork, you know, the club thing was very prevalent because it was a strong competition in Cork at the time. And I think that was the main difference. Cork hadn't been really competing consistently. Like if you look from the Camogie point of view, they were playing national leagues, same squad. They were playing championships, the same squad. Whereas ladies football, you played one week, maybe girls wouldn't come the next week, and that's the way it was. It's hard to believe now. That's the way it was, but it was kind of a perfect storm in the end, in that there was a few of us in our 20s who had been around for a while and were kind of level-headed enough and had success in different sports. Like Juliet had played basketball, Val had played soccer, I was obviously in the Camogie, and then you had girls who had been winning underage with Cork, like Serena and Shisaki, and Bridgie. And what happened then was they came into the setup where the older players were starved of success, and we kind of merged together, and they were used to playing together and forgetting about their clubs in terms of that rivalry, and that really helped. And then obviously when Eamon got involved, that was just capped it all off, you know.
I suppose then Eamon and even the likes of Mary Collins and Mossy Barrett, they brought in like a level of professionalism that wasn't really seen before in like in general in women's sport. Like I can't remember a team that was so like professional and so tight knit. And some of the stuff you were asking for was like basic stuff, like a pre-match meal, a bus, you'd meet up for training sessions, like the stuff that you take for granted now, but it wasn't there back then.
No, it wasn't. Even having a definite place to train. And I remember when I played with Dunamore for 10 years and I had a fantastic time with Dunamore, and Mossy Barrett was a phenomenal trainer, way ahead of his time, very organised and very, very passionate as well. And then with Cork, Mary Collins had that organisation, that, you know, that word in the year, that nurturing bit about her, and then Eamon came involved. And actually before I came in here today, I drove around the back of the building to see where Cork training, and they were, and it actually kind of got quite emotional because I had so many fantastic times there. But yeah, look, when Eamon came involved and Mary, our requests were minimal, and I think they remained minimal right throughout, and we just wanted to be given the opportunity to actually be the best that we could be. So even the farm buildings here in UCC grounds, you know, they're not magnificent, but like we wanted ice baths. We actually did the agricultural ice bath, you know, a few big empty baskets and put in the water and the ice and so on. And, you know, Frankie came along then with the soup, and that kind of small things help, because after training, you're coming into the dressing room, you're having a shower, and then there was a separate dressing room, and Frankie had this big pot of soup ready, and you'd have a soup and a roll, but you'd have the chats with the girls then. Mm. And that helped, because if you're just training with them and, you know, you're not having any social piece with them afterwards, it, you know, I think it would transcend into the field if you came under pressure. But we all became such great friends because of things like that, even going on bus journeys to matches and getting home on the bus after matches. And the easiest thing, and I used to do it before Eamon came involved, was I used to go home in the car after a match because I just wanted to get home. But, you know, having to go home in the bus meant that you were talking to people, socialising. It all just built up to that, you know, that successful team that we had.
Yeah, and then like friendships were forged, things like that. Division, or 2003 even, was a busy campaign for you. You were playing Division 2 football. You were captain of the Camogie, or the football, sorry, at the time. But you actually missed out on the final due to other equipments with Camogie. Was that like the most bizarre thing for you, that you were like, did you feel like you were leaving anyone down, or were you like completely okay with it? Were you at peace? You know, the girls are fine, you know.
Yeah, look, I mean, it wasn't like the ego wasn't saying, oh, I need to be there because, you know, that at all. But it was just like, oh, I train so hard for both of these sports and I can't get to play both of them. And it's still going on today. And I understand the difficulties it is for the fixtures makers. Absolutely, I do. But it's very vague to me now in the sense that I used to take every game as it came. I had to make a decision then. At the time, I probably was seen as more of a camogie player, even though I love playing football. I really enjoyed playing football. But I think at the time, people saw me more as a camogie and we were playing a division higher and in camogie. So yeah, look, it was difficult. It wasn't easy, and it's never easy when you have to make a choice. And I don't envy the girls now because there's even more scrutiny on them because thankfully women's sport is getting more of a profile. So when they do make a decision or when there is a kind of a controversy over fixtures, there is exposure to the general public saying, why can't you sort it out? But it's a very difficult solve, you know.
I suppose it's literally impossible. You're trying to please everyone in one go. And
yeah,
I remember it happened last year and Evie Fitzgerald literally, like, I think he must have got a bad phone call 30 seconds before because he came to it and he was like, egos, they need to check their egos at the door. And I was like, okay.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, see, the thing from, I'd say, late football and a camogie point of view, you know, because I've worked in the administration of it, is that, you know, you have three or four players who are really talented and who can play in both squads. And then you have maybe 45, 50 other girls waiting for them to try and get, you know, in terms of trying to, their games have been predicted by them or dictated by them. So that's difficult, but I would hate to see a fact that a girl would have to choose. It's just, you know, especially if she's so talented and she's committed. If she's committed and talented, then it's a really, really hard thing to do.
Do you think it's like a weird GA problem? Like, we seem to only have this within the GA, that like fixtures, because we don't plan ahead in GA. Like, it's like the freak storms that happened last weekend. You know, like the GA just don't really, like any kind of code doesn't really plan for any of this. But like, because you work in other different sports. So like, do you only see this as a specific GA problem?
I think we're unique in that we offer so many different sports that they can play and they're all played at the same time of the year. It's not like there's a winter season and a summer season. And I think that's hard. And I think then all the best players are pulled into colleges and they're probably playing, if they're under 18s, they're probably playing 21s and adult as well. So they're being pulled and dragged all over the place. And I think if it was easy to be solved, it would have been done long ago.
Yep.
And then the work, it's coupled with the fact that camogie and ladies football, for the most part, I know there are some pitchers like Inniscarra and so on, they don't own their own facilities. So they're reliant then on GA clubs or county grounds try and get their matches played and so on, and you know that's hard as well. That adds to the problem. So yeah, look, it's not good, but for the most part, I think in the summer they get it right. They might have to play games within 24 hours of each other, but I remember one year we played a couple of times it happened. We played an inter-county championship match in Camogie and then we drove down the road, guard escort, to get to a football championship match. You know, that's just what you did because you wanted to play both. You know,
I think my favorite was, I was reading some player had to like arrive in a helicopter and I was like, that's the only way you want to arrive to a game, like in a helicopter.
Yeah, we were never treated like that. No, we never got a helicopter, unfortunately.
I was going to say 2019 here at its peak there. Another year that I was actually highly interested in was your 2005 year, because you opted out of the league. Were you just in football? Were you just like completely tired? Were you feeling the body was wearing down a little bit? But then you were coaxed back by Eamon Ryan. But did you just feel like, I just need a break now for like, you know, 3 months and then I'll, like the brain needs to calm down more than anything?
Not that I publicised it, but I actually had retired because I was absolutely wrecked. And not that anybody would have taken any notice anyway, but I'd been playing since 93, both codes. And I know the football wasn't long seasons because we were getting beaten in Cork football, but I was playing camogie at club, camogie football, and being quite successful. And the job was difficult as well, like, you know, working weekends, working night times, because I was working with volunteers.
And you were just put into the CEO of the Community Association as well, so
yeah,
busy times.
The CEO was much later, but I was actually working in development for the Camogie Association. But in 95, and I remember watching that match and the National League final, and I was like, you know, that natural urge, oh, I want to be playing, I want to go back. And in fairness, Eamon approached me afterwards, and I was very, very nervous going back to the first training session. Because I was never really sure of myself anyway. But Eamon was fantastic and the girls were great. And look, obviously, you know, that year is history now, what happened at the end of it. But I won my first senior All-Ireland with Cork in 2005 after making my debut in 1993. So it was a long wait.
Jesus, yeah. It's like, you know, whenever you like open up the paper, it's like Leitrim playing at a first, you know.
I was actually making out there with my brother a couple of years back. I think the only team I actually never played against in football was Leitrim. I think every other county I played in, because I played in Division 4, Division 3, Division 2 and Division 1 football, so I came across them all.
Yeah.
So I actually think Leitrim was the only county I never played in.
And it's like the most bizarre fun fact.
I don't know, but like it's funny because people say to me, oh, I've never been to Donegal, and I'm kind of looking at them going, what? And like, because you play sport and you get travelled to all these places, like, I mean, I definitely have played in every county in Ireland bar Leitrim. So, you know, and it's that kind of experiences, it just kind of makes me smile because it's kind of like, I got to do that for free. You know what I mean? I got taken all these places, got to see all these things and meet all these people and have all these experiences, and it's fantastic, you know?
It's cool, yeah. You were saying 2005 even was like a little bit bittersweet, like you won your first All-Ireland, but you were disappointed that you didn't make the starting 15. Like you were hard slogging it, like everyone, and you were saying you were there since 93. So like to not make the final, I remember someone actually said to me, and I don't want you to feel old in this matter, but someone said that you were actually 13 years older than the youngest. So
yeah, like Breed and Rena won their first All-Ireland at 18, and I won mine at 28, 10 years later. So I was disappointed, hugely disappointed, because I was absolutely hopping coming up to that final. I was going really well, and I think I was experienced enough to know that I was thereabouts, and I really need to put in the hard yards. And look, maybe if I'd have played the National League, you know, things would have been different, but I came back later and I had a lot of ground to make up on players who had established, and rightly so, had been playing on the team. And I came on, I think, after 18 or 19 minutes in the final, and I enjoyed it, and it was fantastic to be part of that group. But like, I mean, I was mature enough to know, look, that this is just sport, and you know, you just want to win. And you know, there are some days when you play team sports and you might be the person who gets them over the line, and there's some days when you're playing team sports and it's them who's going to get you over the line. So that's the beauty of it, you know what I mean? And I've always been competitive, always want to try and be the best that I can be, and use all my talents. And I think, you know, when I was playing with Cork that time, I knew it was a special group of players and I wanted to be part of it, you know.
And then I suppose the interesting thing was that you openly kind of said that your confidence, like in the latter seasons, was a little bit knocked. Like you were joking earlier as a forward there that you weren't really scoring much, but it did actually, if, like as a back, you were under, ironically, you were under less pressure, even though sometimes you're like the last line of defence, but you felt more pressure in the full forward. Like how would you build that back up? Like, because surely that's...
Yeah, I mean, people have said to me that, you know, with Dunamore, you know, I was a really good club forward, like, I was a really good club forward, but I always felt that there were people better than me on the Cork football team, and they were. I used to always put myself under serious pressure. Now, if I had my time back, I would seriously look at my self-talk. Like, I'd miss a point and I'd be dwelling on it for the next 5 minutes of the match, where somebody else might miss a point and just get over it after 10 seconds. And that was my own fault. It was because I set myself such high standards. And now with mature reflection, you kind of say, Mary, you eat it. You know what I mean? You had to just get over it, like whatever, everybody makes mistakes. And now if I'm coaching kids or I'm talking to my nieces and nephews, you know, the first thing I always ask them, did you have fun? And for the most part of my career, I enjoyed it. But when I was playing Camogie, playing in the backs, I kind of had this kind of sadistic satisfaction of getting the ball, the dirty ball. I was hungry, like, to do the right thing and to make sure that other team wasn't going to score. And that stayed with me throughout my life. Like when I was in the sport for the six backs I used to play with in Cork, you know, we had this kind of real hunger to actually make sure that we were going to get the ball first and we were going to be the best defence. And if we were going to be the best defence, we were going to give our forwards the options to actually miss as well. So it was a different kind of an attitude. I had really eager in terms of the defending side of the house, but Camogie, you know.
Yeah, it's just kind of like funny because, you know, as I said, like other people will be like bricking it in defence knowing that they're like the last line, like goalkeepers and everything, but you seem to relish the opportunity of just not bullying the forward a little bit, but I suppose you got like a joy out of being like, you know, looking down going, ha, I'm better than you know.
Well, it was like in football, if anybody saw me playing football, they'd say, well, she'd never be back in football anyway because she couldn't tackle without giving away a free. But in Camogie, you know, people would have seen me. I mean, like, I could play the game because, I think my biggest asset, my biggest skill was my reading of the game. I was able to see where the ball was going to be and be in the right place at the right time. But, you know, people would see me as a hard centre back or whatever. But, like, I said to somebody the other day, you know, I was being serious, like, in my inter-county career, I was only ever booked twice. And by the same player, I think she got some kind of a, and she was from Tipperary at the time, we had a fierce rivalry with Tipperary. But, you know, I'd be very proud of that, you know, because when you're back and you have to make, you know, you're playing there, you're on the edge of having to actually do the right thing and make sure your team is getting the ball and so on. So only being booked twice and having played for that amount of years for Cork, I'm kind of one of the things I'm most pleased about.
As well, you mentioned there that your rival Tipperary was kind of coming. Like 2006 was, you know, the change to the Camogie Championship, and a few people were like reluctant to change. But like looking at it now, kind of a whole like few a decade, I suppose, later, it's actually been a good change. It's making Camogie like a little bit more competitive. But it's kind of weird, actually. And I was saying it to Rena a few weeks ago that the teams that you were coming up against, like the Tipperarys and the Wexfords, I'm not saying they're gone now, but it's kind of the only like, you know, consistent team is Cork. Is that not a concern for you, but like, is it a bit concerning that like some of the teams that you were fopping off against and you were having like the best matches with, they're now like Wexford now, you know, in a serious state?
Yeah,
now,
look, from as a Camogie fan and as a Camogie member, it's worrying because, you know, the pool of hurling counties in this country and the pool of Camogie counties in the country is quite small compared to football, and for Camogie to be seen as a competitive competition, we need those counties to be actually competing at senior to county level. Yeah, look, Tip had such a golden era of players at that time. They have definitely lost their way. Now they have won underage titles, but they haven't come through yet, those Tip players. Wexford's, it is worrying in terms of what's going on down there at the moment. But at the moment, you have Kilkenny, Cork, and you have Galway, and you have Limerick. And behind that, then you have Clare, Dublin, Wexford and Tip, and we need all those teams to be stepping up a level, because, you know, Cork are so professional, great group of players, and the club structure in Cork is really good in terms of the culture of wanting to play for your county. And I think we're very lucky to be in that state. I think other counties don't have the players who have that desire and that determination to play for their county. You know, I could be wrong, but it hasn't manifested in those counties actually competing with the Corks, Kilkennys and the Galways in recent years.
It's going to take obviously a while for them to kind of even like come back. Like, I mean, even with the Wexford situation, like it takes a lot to like come back, because you can see young girls kind of watching being like, you know, I don't want to be a part of that. Like, if it's that much of a miss, like I'd rather stay in my lane over here. Like, and that's a huge knock-on effect then for future.
Absolutely. And you find if there's any girl who is good at a couple of sports, she's going to go to the sports that's more organised, and that she has a chance of competing in. You know, you don't mind playing in a team if everybody's committed. But if you're on a team that, you know, people are kind of half committed and, you know, structures aren't good, then you're not going to be really satisfied, and you're going to walk away. So it is worrying, but I think the likes of Wexford are such a strong Camogie clubs in Wexford. There's 33 Camogie clubs in Wexford. So, I mean, I expect them to bounce back, but they do need to reorganise. And I think they need to look back down through the levels of underage, what levels they're competing at as well.
2007, they were going for football 3 in a row and a potential Camogie 3 in a row. The first thing that, like, I shouldn't be laughing because it's obviously dead serious, but you like nearly died on holidays, like your knee injury.
Well, that's been an exaggeration.
That's
been
an exaggeration,
right?
Yeah, yeah. But like your knee injury on holidays, and you going up to the, like, the receptionist and going, yep, see.
Well, like, it's so funny because we just had our first training session, and of course we had put on our flip flops walking back in, and I was walking back by myself, and there was marble steps up to the hotel. Of course, being in flip-flops, I slipped in the marble and I actually rammed my knee at the edge of the step. So this English couple were coming out and they were like, "Are you all right?" And I was like, "Yeah." And I just, they walked off and I took my hand away and there was just this big gap and there was blood gushing down my knee. And there was nobody there, and I was sharing the apartment with, I think it was Juliet and Rena. And they came back in and I was kind of sitting there and looking at me going, "Are you all right, Mal?" And I was like, "No." So the receptionist insisted on calling the ambulance. So this ambulance came down and collected me with my knee. I went to a hospital. It was the cleanest hospital I've ever been in. Oh my God. It was just like, and they must have been bored because it was 3 or 4 of them around me. So I ended up getting about 5 or 6 stitches in the knee. So I was disappointed because it was a training week. It wasn't a holiday. You know, we were to train and we had trained hard that first morning and I was really annoyed. So I missed out the second day of training. I was kind of doing the water and, you know, and I said, on the third morning, I woke up and I said, "Flip this, I'm just going to do it." So I did all the training. I missed one session. And I'm proud of that because I could have, you know, it was sore, and if I'd have fallen, you know, the stitches would have been ripped out of me. But yeah, it wasn't my, you know, my most proudest moment, falling up steps. I'm kind of reminded of it now and then by the lads. But yeah, look, that week was a brilliant week for training and it sets the tone for the whole year. But falling up steps when you're sober is not something you really want to do.
No, it's really not. Were you one of the first kind of like female sport groups at the time to go on an abroad, not abroad holidays, you were saying, but like a training holiday? Because I personally can't remember anyone.
Yeah, I mean, there had been teams who had gone on holidays before for winning All Ireland and stuff, and they did the fundraising. But it was a reward for winning the previous year, but it definitely was a training holiday. And I think we were one of the first that took that opportunity. We didn't just see it as a holiday. We took the opportunity to go on holidays, obviously enjoy the sun, but do the with the training as well.
That's cool. I suppose then, like, unfortunately for you, then, like, you had a really bad knee injury then, which was suffered 2 weeks before the All-Ireland final. And, like, that must have been, like, you know, you were well into your career. So, like, that to you must have been, like, devastating. Were you kind of laying there thinking, Jesus Mary, like, what are you doing now? Like, you know, yeah. Just...
Well, it was kind of shinawil. Like, it happened down in Macroom in the J Grounds. Macroom, we were playing a boys' team.
I never trust Macroom J Grounds.
We were playing playing a boys' team because we used to play boys' teams now and then because they were so fast. And any of the boys' teams we played, in fairness, they always respected us. And it was 3 days after we had been beaten by Wexford in the All-Ireland Camogie final that I think was my second or third attempt at trying to win 3 in a row. So I obviously, after that All-Ireland final on Sunday night, I'd had a few drinks, whatever, and look, the body wasn't right. On the Wednesday, I should never have togged out. And I went running out for a ball and my marker was chasing after me and I jumped for the ball and it came down. I hyperextended my knee. So essentially my knee went the wrong way and I came down and I was roaring and the young fella was like, I didn't touch her. And I was like, you're grand, but I'm in serious pain. So we luckily had a doctor there at the time, Dr. Lucy, and she came out and I can't remember how we got off the field, but anyway, I remember being in the dressing room on top of the table and they had called an ambulance because the knee was in a bad way. So the guy came in with this kind of thing you blow up around your knee to protect it, like. So he was putting it on anyway, and I was having an argument with him because he was cutting off my sock. I said, they're my lucky socks. Like, and he was looking at me going, this is coming off. I actually still have the sock in my cupboard at home. I know, weird. But he was just putting it on the boot, and I was lying on the table in the dressing room, and he goes, Mary, I'm really sorry. I'm just have to get in a call. There's a heart attack. I have to go. I'm the only ambulance in the area. So I was like, go, go, go. So there was me lying on the table, and there was nobody else there. And I was kind of going, hello? So eventually I had a Jeep at the time, and Dr. Lucy and Angela Walsh came with me and brought me to the hospital. So when I got to the hospital, they said, oh, it's not cracked or whatever. But then that was just an x-ray. So I went to the brilliant Dr. Khan the next day and he sent me down to the hospital for an MRI and the knee was destroyed. I'd pulled muscles off of bones and I had 80% bruising in the knee, which was going to take time anyway. But I still came home to try to kick a football in excruciating pain because I didn't want to believe I was going to miss an All-Ireland final. So look, I missed it. It's one of my biggest regrets of my career. Cork went on to beat Mayo comprehensively in the final and I still have a photograph of me and Juliet after the match. And
she brought you up to lift the trophy.
She did,
yeah.
Yeah. No, Juliet's a dote. And even the night before the All-Ireland, we had been sharing the room and she gave me a lovely note. And I still have that note in my wallet, actually. You know, it was a difficult time, but it's all relative, you know, it's sport. Mm. I was disappointed hugely. And I remember crying in the restroom. I was trying to hide the tears because I didn't want to be up nine the girls before the match. But look, when they won, it was just fantastic. And, you know, you just kind of say, well, that's just the one that got away.
And I suppose then, like what everyone always says, is that it's like the physical fatigue is bad enough for an injury, but it's the mental fatigue that actually comes with it. Like, you know, physically, you know, you're out, but mentally it yeah. takes such like a big toll. And
well, I mean, in that time when that happened to me in my career, I knew I was coming towards the end because I had been playing for so long and I had been very lucky injury free. But now, actually, that 7 months I was out injured prolonged my career in the end because I got to play again in 2 more All-Ireland finals. I got to an All-Ireland semi-finals in Camogie. So it definitely prolonged my career because my body got a complete break. It was very funny. I remember I was trying to recover and like obviously like all athletes, you recover on your own. And I'd got an aqua jogging belt and I had gone down to the local pool in Pilmore near Yall and I had the aqua belt on and I was jogging up and down. And I was kind of struggling because obviously the knee was in a bad way. And this old lady kind of came up to me and she bent down. She goes, "Ah, are you learning to swim, dear?" And it's just one of the most abiding memories. And I was trying to say to her, "Oh yeah," I said, "I am, yeah, trying to learn how to swim." But it was just one of the most abiding memories of, you know, that time. And like I was in the pool night and day. And eventually then I got back and I was very nervous. I actually went on the ladies football all-star trip that year. And that's another regret. I couldn't play because I was still injured. You know, and we went to Dubai. So I ended up with Mary Collins kind of helping her manage the team on the match day, but
pointing aggressively.
Yeah. So looking on jealously, but so yeah. Look, I mean, I came back from it, and it was great to actually get the opportunity to play with Cork again in Bow Code after it.
You came back 16 months later, I believe. Like that's an insane amount of time out. So were you like petrified coming back into a Camogie football setup? Were you kind of like how much have I got to catch up with here? You know.
Well, definitely from a football point of view, because it was my left leg, and I'm a left legger. Mm. And anybody knows, you know, she's totally left legged. And I was that weight of that ball kicking and so on. But look, it's all about confidence, and everybody was really patient with me, and I built up my fitness levels, and I was even more dedicated off the field in terms of my stretching with my skipping rope and making sure I was prepared, I was hydrated, because I just couldn't afford to have another injury like that again. And thank God I didn't get one.
2009, then you were elected as a football captain. Was that like, you know, I mean, you were there kind of before in 2003, but you had to miss out due to Camogie. Was that, were you like, this is it now, lads, no matter what happens, like, I'm there, like, I have to, more for yourself, really, I suppose, more than anything, just to prove to yourself that you could do this comeback, you know?
Yeah, well, look, I mean, that's probably a good way of looking at it, but I was very lucky in that Inch had a very good team at the time, and the way it worked in Cork Laois football and still works is that the county champions have the captaincy. And then I think that I was hanging around so long, they said, geez, maybe I'll give it to Mary. But yeah, 2009 was special because of, you know, playing with your county is great and winning with your county. And if you get to captain your county to an All-Ireland, that's fantastic. But 2009 was a really difficult year. I was pushing on 33 years of age. I was training 6 nights a week and had been doing that since 1993. I was tired, the body was tired, but this was a fantastic opportunity. I think in some parts of 2009, I definitely played tired. Now, it was a fantastic experience to play for Cork, and we won the National League. We won the Munster Championship. To win in Croke Park, didn't have my greatest day in Croke Park on the All-Ireland final day. But it was just, for me, it was the pinnacle of my career to captain my county to win All-Ireland in Croke Park and to go up the Hogan steps. I still get a slagging from the lads about the link to my speech, but I said I was only going to be up there once, so I said I'd take the opportunity.
Father Ted moment there, yeah. Golden glaring speech. But I suppose it was kind of like, it was really like cool for you, because as I said, like, you got to come back. And what I actually found nice is that, like, in a way, it came a bit like full circle. So like, you were annoyed 2005 because you didn't get on the team, but 2009, then you were like, you know, as you said, you were 33, you knew the body was tired, that you were able to stand there and go, listen, it's a tight game, you know, take me off if it's necessary. Like, that was like, your role evolved like quickly from like the one that was like a bit, not like annoyed, but like, I would be like, anyone would be annoyed.
Yeah,
like,
when you're a competitive animal, you're spot on. When you're a competitive animal, you're going to be annoyed. And I think you grow up as well. Look, I mean, you just grow up and you understand that this is the way, you know, sporting life is. If you're going to achieve it, it is cutthroat, and in women's and men's sport is the same. Excuse me. But yeah, look, again, when the final whistle went in 2009, and it's kind of one of those games of legendary, the way they kept the ball and, you know, fantastic players ran the ball. And if you look back at that clip, actually, when Cork played keep ball, it was all the really fantastic players, the people I really admired, who were in that clip, who were looking for the ball, the likes of the Naritas, the Deirdre Rileys, the Juliets, you know, fantastic people, the Breegees, the Arenas, who just, you know, they were real leaders. And you know, that was probably one of the sweetest victories ever, because we had won by a point, and because it was against Dublin as well.
That was part one of our interview with Mary Connor. Tune in next week, where Mary O'Connor talks about her retirement, what it's like to be CEO of Federation of Irish Sport, and the development of women in sport and the 20 by 20 initiative. Don't forget to subscribe on Apple and Spotify, and tune in every Friday at redextra.ie, and follow us at Big Red Bench and at JoannaOr_OX. Cheerio.
The Big Red Bench.
Game on.
Saturday and Sunday from 6 p.m.